Hi guys, this is Will, interrupting your regularly scheduled podcast with a bit of a special moment here to preface the episode. I've moved my single slop for the week to this point because today, Wednesday the 13th of 2013, on the same day we recorded this podcast, I received news that a good friend of mine from elementary school through high school passed away in a car wreck. He was a good bud of mine. We read a lot of the same fantasy novels from Terry Brooks through the first few Game of Sorry, Song of Ice and Fire novels. Played Final Fantasy together and a whole mess of other things. And in fact, he is the friend that I went in together with, sold out of a boatload of Mage Knight product, and in September, I believe it was, of 2002. The fall after we graduated from high school, we loaded up on the brand spanking new Game of Thrones Westeros Edition card game. And for the first several years that I played, he was my go-to tournament buddy. And my practice partner to get ready for the events. I hadn't seen him much in recent years. He had moved away very recently, in fact, to Illinois. But in memoriam here, Mr. Andy Tarpey, May 19th, 1984, to March 13th, 2013.
Kings and corpses always draw attendance.
Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chump, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons licensed music you hear today. Welcome to Season 3.
No, I don't think you've used that one before.
No, okay, good.
Yeah. So far,
I was a little concerned.
Stick with that.
I don't have a running list of what quotes I've used and not. So,
you know, if we'd been thinking, we really would have done that.
Yeah, but then again, we started doing this 104 episodes ago. I didn't think we'd make it past like episode 5.
5? Really? Man, I figured we'd at least make it through the end of that year. Now, keep in mind, we started in like November, so
fair enough. So. You know. Like episode four,
like
probably.
Yeah,
because back then we were also.
Oh yeah, we were every other week. Yeah. I forgot about that. Awkward.
Yeah.
Well, back here weekly these days on Two Champs and a Chump. I'm Will Lentz, also known as Kennen.
I'm Brett Zeiler, also known as Intentionally Anonymous, also known as Kennen.
Right.
I post under both names.
This was really awkward.
I hacked Will's account, so whenever you see any kind of dumb posts that Will's making, which is going to be actually most of them, it's actually me posting.
Yeah. The more offensive it is, the more likely it was actually to have been Brett.
Unless it, like, wraps around, because everyone knows that, you know, being offensive is cyclical. So if it gets back around to being, like, so bad, it actually doesn't matter, it's probably Will again.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize.
Yeah, it's cyclical.
You could come
yep.
all the way
yep.
full circle on that. Huh. That explains Daryl a lot,
because mm-hmm.
I've been trying to figure out how and why he's everyone's favorite host.
I don't understand either.
And I guess that's it. He's actually come full circle. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I can see that.
yeah, that explains a lot. Well, this week we're back with a, I think at this point, probably long-awaited feature. But first, we're going to hit on the good old news and feedback from listeners. So first, FFG news. I think we had a spoiler article this week, right?
Yes, we did. I believe it's the third chapter pack. I honestly don't know for sure.
Yeah, I think you're right. Does it say here? Yeah. It mentions the first two chapter packs, so assumably this one is the third.
Yes, it's the Pirate of Lists, and I'm pretty sure that's the third chapter pack when it was originally announced. So,
right. So we get a couple spoiler cards here. We've got Fire and Blood, which is a Targ event. It's challenges. Choose a Targaryen character. That character gets +2 strength until the end of the phase. Then attach Fire and Blood to that character. Counts as a boon attachment with the text. Attached character cannot be discarded from play. I mean, it's
neat.
Yeah, I mean, the art's sick.
Yeah, the art's really cool. I'll admit that.
The ability is okay. Pumps are always kind of useful, though they tend to get edged out by a lot of other cards.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, out of the boon kind of events like this,
probably the worst.
This is definitely the worst.
Nah, the Stark one. Saves a location.
Wait a minute, that's legal in the CCG?
Yeah.
Shit, I didn't even realize that had been reprinted.
It was in the Stark box, I think.
Yep, didn't even remember that had been reprinted.
It was.
Oh. Well, sucks to be Stark. Yeah, this is better than the Stark one.
I thought so.
Yeah, I mean, Targ does have a lot of allies, and this is going to keep them from getting discarded.
True.
Provided you get to, you know, make it through a challenge phase first so you can play this.
Yeah, and it does give them a little bit of, I mean, it gives Targ a little anti-burn tech with the strength buff, so assuming that your dude isn't killed immediately by a burn effect, you can then play this one and buff him up.
Yeah, it can be kind of handy in the mirror match. Keep your own guys out of being messed with for, say, threat from the north, since they won't be able to be discarded. And it does make me kind of curious. You know, they've got all these characters that only enter play when you want them to, and some that return back to hand, and then they've got Missandei that can't be discarded and whatnot. I wonder if maybe some crazy Targ deck might want to try out Valor Doharis as a reset.
I don't know. Probably not Valor Doharis, but maybe a lot more Westeros Bleeds.
Yeah, touche, salesman. Bleeds is going to look a lot better with all that influence. Mm-hmm. Be looking for Knights of the Hollow Hill with Westeros Bleeds.
Yep.
Once this pack's out, anyway.
Yes. So, eventually.
Okay, actually, maybe right now. I still say for a lot of builds that just lost Hatchling's Feast, because they want to run one of the other restricted. Bleeds is a really good replacement. Alright, and then we got a second spoiler card.
That's a Greyjoy character, Andric the Unsmiling. He's unique. 3 cost, 3 strength, military with a naval enhancement, and then a power icon. He's an Ironborn and a Lord, with the response, after you win a challenge in which Andric the Unsmiling participated by 4 more total strength, choose the topmost location in the losing player's discard pile and put it into play under your control.
What do you think there?
Definitely a lot cooler than Fire and Blood.
Oh, yeah.
If you're playing, like, Greyjoy specific location control, he's probably really good.
Oh, yeah. If you take out something with the newly made Lord, so you can bring it back with Andric.
Yeah. I mean, even if you're playing just, like, newly made Lords, I mean, that probably still might be enough.
Oh, yeah.
Just saying, you know, pop like a Scourge or something.
If anybody's still playing.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, no one's probably playing that.
Lannisport Brothel.
Lannisport Brothel would be cool. Pentoshi Manor.
Pentoshi Manor, if people are still picking it. Which, in Lanny, there probably is a good chance of that.
Yeah, I mean, that or Castellan.
Or, hell, Aegon's Hill.
That would be really cool.
I'd take Aegon's Hill with Andric in a heartbeat.
Yeah. So, I mean, unless you are playing some targeted location control, he's all right. He's a decently costed body with a naval enhancement. The naval enhancement does make it a little easier to trigger his win by 4 or more clause, because you can wait until after. I mean, assuming they don't have any naval defender, any naval characters, you can wait until after they declare defenders and then jump him in to trigger himself. So,
right.
But yeah, he's He's a really cool character.
He works nicely with Mill, too. I think it's worth pointing out. You don't have to have removed that location from play.
Mm-hmm. However, with Mill, you do have a lot less control because...
Oh, yeah.
You made Mill into, like, a sunset sea, or that'd be useful, a summer sea.
Right. Yeah. It could be crap.
Yeah.
Most certainly. So, yeah, I don't know. He's cool.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Decent traits. Lord and Ironborn are both solid, so... I dig him.
Yeah, I wish he had a crest of some kind, but then again, I wish most Greyjoy characters had, like, a war crest. Because I love their war crest tech.
Yeah, a handful more war crests for them, I think, would go a long way towards fleshing that theme out. It'd be pretty awesome.
Yep. Is there any other Game of Thrones news that you've seen recently? These new spoilers that came out yesterday, I guess.
Yeah.
Are the only things that I've seen.
Thrones, I don't remember seeing anything. I mean, general LCG stuff. Mm-hmm. We've got the Desolation of Hoth that just actually released.
Yep, the first Star Wars Force pack is out. At least it's out enough that I have one in my possession.
Pretty exciting.
Our local game store got it in stock. Again, yesterday.
Friendly local game store.
It's not that friendly.
Yeah, you're right. Are in TFLGS?
I like it.
Okay.
I like it a lot.
All right. And then we've got the announcement of the upcoming box for Netrunner.
Yep, Creation and Control, spotlighting Hoth, Bioroid, and Shapers. So they're doing it a little differently than a lot of other games do where... Rather than like in Thrones, there's a box for Stark and there's a box for Greyjoy. Actually, taking one Corporal and one Runner faction and boxing them together for their deluxe expansions or box sets, whatever they want to call them.
That seems pretty reasonable to me. I think that's a real good idea, though.
It would make a lot more sense if there was another Runner faction.
Exactly what I was about to say. Right now, that makes things lopsided. So I'm not sure how they're going to handle that when they get to the end of the cycle.
They might just put like a lot of neutral cards in. Who knows?
It's possible.
Or they'll just start rolling over again to have the last one be like Jinteki and Shaper again.
Possibly. Or I've heard a lot of folks thinking that they're going to throw out a new Runner faction to balance things out.
Yeah.
I mean, and we've seen that happen. Call of Cthulhu used one of their boxed expansions to introduce an entire new faction to the game. So it's possible.
Yeah. And then, I mean, even in Thrones, like, the Martell and Greyjoy box sets didn't introduce them to the game, per se, but it was the first time they were relevant.
They introduced the LCG, anyway. Yeah.
I mean, there were cards for those factions out before that.
Well, oh yeah, good point, because there was...
But they weren't relevant.
...cycle and whatnot, yeah. Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, I think that's really all I've seen news-wise. Nothing terribly exciting otherwise. We have gotten a little bit of listener feedback, though. We got a couple emails that I think about decks and such that are going to have to wait because we've got a topic that's going to take up the vast majority of this episode. But we did get a message from Stephen Cantrell, who posts over on the Card Game DB forums pretty often as Scantrell 24.
I assume S Cantrell 24.
Scantrell.
I'm not going to call
it.
It is written as one word. I'm not going to call him Scantrell.
Anyway, so Scantrell.
I'm not going to call you that.
He's got a project going on that he started that he wanted us to kind of get out there via the podcast, which I think sounds pretty cool. He started a Game of Thrones like database, not just for the cards like Card Game DB itself, but for results.
Yeah.
So if you go over there, hit up the Game of Thrones forum section, and he's got a thread with links to a couple forms. One is like a Google kind of a multi-choice questionnaire that will let you fill in like what house won the game, what agenda they were playing, what restricted card they were playing, and that sort of thing.
And then what house lost the game, and their agenda and restricted card.
Right. And then he's got a link to another one, which is the results file to kind of map that out for people. So I think that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Honestly, there's a lot to keep track of as far as we're going into regional season. I don't know if people are going to be able to mark down all of the games from these competitive events like that. But if you're keeping records that you could use to fill into that database, I think that would be freaking awesome. And I think would actually give us an even better overall picture of the power level of certain kind of, deck archetypes and agendas and stuff. So, Yeah, I think it sounds like an awesome project.
Yeah, it seems pretty slick from when I was just... I mean, I looked over it 5 minutes ago and Will showed it to me for the first time. It looks really cool. My only comment on it is I saw that when it comes to the Wildling and Night's Watch agendas, it's only written out as Wildlings and Night's Watch, so it doesn't allow for if you're playing only two of the agendas or only one of the agenda. Right. So Mr. Stephen Kenshaw, might be something worth looking into, adding in just extra options for all three of the agendas of each side, two different ones of the agendas of each side, and then one agenda for whatever side. So it'll make a lot more agenda options, but it'll give you a lot more complete information, I think.
Yeah, sure enough.
Speaking of compiling information, regional season is almost here.
It is.
Yes, and as we've said in several previous episodes, we here at Two Champs, One Chump would very much like to be the repository of information for the regionals.
Just as long as we're not a suppository.
I mean, Daryl's already that.
Daryl's full of suppositories.
He is. He is full of suppositories. Like, chock full. Like, he's brimming with them.
Brimming. They're ready to start popping out at any moment.
They are. But yes, yeah, so just be aware that as regional season begins here in the next couple weeks, if you are a TO or if you know a TO for a regional, please keep track of the stats. So the house breakdown, the agenda breakdown, the restricted breakdown. I mean, if you want to send us like the actual, like, not necessarily deck list, but like the top eight results, that'd be nice and all. But specifically, we're looking for agenda, house, and restricted card breakdowns.
I mean, if you want to send us like the winning deck list, I would totally be down with
that. We would absolutely take that and talk about it on the show. Maybe not like a full episode for a deck list because there's like 50 regionals.
Right.
We would definitely at least mention it.
But I'm all about disseminating info.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
I want to collect this and then get it out to folks to kind of analyze.
Yeah, so anyone that was listening during last year's regional season, I'm sure remembers us. Every episode, we spent at least a little bit of time going over the updated tourney information that we received. And we did get a lot of good information from that, but lots of times we didn't hear back from regionals, or we would only get partial information from regionals. And, I mean, every little bit obviously helps, but getting the most complete information allows for us to make the most complete
Observations
is the word I'm looking for, yeah. Yes. So again, if you are a TO or if you know the TO, please gather that information from your tournaments. It takes 5 minutes just to go through and put check marks down next to houses or whatever.
Yeah. You've probably already got sign-up sheets that marks all that info down, yes. So just tally it up.
Send it to us in a multitude of different ways. Will, how can they reach us?
They can reach us at twochampsonechump. Both of those are digits, not spelled out. So twochampsonechump@gmail.com. We can be reached also at twochampsonechump on Facebook. And I know they added the capability to message pages a while back. In fact, that's how Steven got a hold of us. And so you can always message us there. You can post on the wall. You can get a hold of us via Twitter if need be. Hell, you can always get a hold of us on Google+.
Probably won't accomplish much, though.
Not a whole lot. But Google+ does at least email me when someone tags me in something.
True.
That's good. So it brings my attention to it on the rare occasion something happens.
It's not very often.
Nope, not that often.
Poor Google+.
But like 3 times today, though.
Really?
What are the odds?
That's crazy.
Yeah, a friend of mine decided he was going to move. He's going to segregate Facebook via Google+. He's going to basically have all of his intelligent discussion on Google+, and his like griping at people on the road and talking about video games and stuff like that on Facebook.
So the important stuff's all on Facebook?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. But yeah, so as you get that information, as regional season progresses, send it to us. We will do all the hard work. You just need to send us an email. And then listen as we talk about the stats you send us.
Right. Well, speaking of listening to us talk about stuff, I think we're pretty much ready for the main event.
I mean, they've been listening to us for a while now, so that's nothing new.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty standard that we don't get into the main topic for quite a while into the episode, but I think this is a topic that folks are going to be raring to hear.
More than likely.
Right? Because, you know, thanks to the FAQ and then our kind of the way our release and recording schedules work, we've been kind of delayed in getting to reviewing the Great Fleet.
Yes, we have.
Chapter pack.
Silly FAQ throwing us off.
Exactly. But it is still new to us, so to speak. Yeah. New to some of you. And certainly new to our review.
Yes, as it has not happened yet.
Right. So this is the episode we're going to hit on that. In case you happen to not listen to our prior review episode.
Over Reach of the Kraken.
Right. We have decided to change up the review scheme a little bit. We are no longer doing top five, bottom five. Long may it rest in peace.
Yes, long may it.
But we've hit on a semi-new rating scheme. New to us, not new to any of you if you've ever attended an American school. It is the A through F rating system.
Yes.
And in the last review, we did give things a little bit of a shading with plus and minus. There were some folks in favor of that, some not. I personally think it gives an extra little bit that's handy, especially mm-hmm. with our discussion.
I mean, I intended to keep it.
Yeah, I was going to say, so I think we're going to keep it, but yes. I wanted to acknowledge that, you know, some people thought that yes. it was kind of a waste, but I don't think it detracts too much personally, and it adds some for us.
So, well, just to give the listeners a little bit of how they can interpret our
context
is again the word I'm looking for. Thank you, William.
You're welcome.
You're a gentleman and a scholar.
Emphasis on scholar, not so much gentleman.
Absolutely not. No, you're kind of a scumbag.
Oh, most certainly.
Yes,
I am a walking hive of scum and villainy.
You are,
one might say.
I would not actually say that. I would not ever say that.
You're right.
But
I don't walk
really.
Very often.
You don't. You yeah. loathe it.
I do.
But let's give our listeners some context about what an A through F card is.
Okay, and these are just the solid letters, no plus and
yes,
minuses
yeah.
there. Our previous comparison was an A card is Mira Reed, and I think even now that she's been added to the restricted list, I think that
she's still
stands.
I agree, she's probably
fact,
still an A.
Yeah, in fact, most of the cards on the restricted list are probably all going to be A's.
In general, yes.
Aside from a handful like the Furies and
yeah.
refugees that are there mainly for variety purposes.
Mm-hmm. But yes, Mira Reed would be an A card, something that's just crazy powerful, has a huge impact on the game just by being played in the game.
Playable in any deck
yes.
that she is allowed in
yes.
and probably should be in every deck that she's
There's
allowed.
Very little reason not to run a Mira Reed if you're playing a Stark deck.
Right. Though now that she's on the restricted list, and you know, there's some
other
factors to play in.
Yeah.
But I still think she's a worthy example of an A card.
Yes, I agree. We'll jump to a B card. We originally had the King's Lady Knight of Flowers in there. Now with his restriction, I'm not sure. Unlike Mira, he's probably a less good card.
A slightly less good
yes.
restricted card. Yeah, he's still good. Don't
yeah.
get me
oh
wrong.
Yeah, no, he's still good, but maybe not in the deck you're wanting to play. So our current and our new B card example is going to be Magister Illyrio from the Beyond the Narrow Sea
yeah,
cycle.
Not the corset.
Not the corset, Magister Illyrio, no, not at all. But no, from Beyond the Narrow Sea, a card that has a good impact in a deck built around it.
Very effective in
yes.
a deck built around it.
But outside of that, not so much, and with some kind of like, in like Illyrio's case, a built-in downside is in that he does have the ally trait.
Sure
where if you have a jumping deck, he's pretty solid. You're going to be playing probably at least one copy of him if you're playing a lot of ambush shenanigans. But if you're playing a target deck that doesn't have much ambushing going on, he's probably a dead card if you're playing him.
Sure enough. Then our C card is just the mid range.
Yeah,
it's a solid, respectable card.
Most cards are going to be Cs.
Yeah, most cards should be. I think for the health of the game, so
yep.
don't be disappointed if something is a C. I believe our previous example, we were trying to jog our memories earlier. If it's not the example we used before, I apologize, but this is the current choice, if nothing else, is going to be Maester Cressa.
Yes. He's just all around a pretty solid character. He's not going to be seen in every Bera deck, but...
He's very useful
wrong with Maester Cressa
in certain situations,
yes.
but he's not... always, you know, having an impact
mm-hmm.
on the game. You know, I feel good including him. If I have to cut him to make room, I don't feel terrible.
Yeah.
You know, he's just very respectable,
mm-hmm.
I suppose you could say.
Yeah. A D card is, again, going back to our previous example, like Qyburn's Informers from the core set. A card that, if it was just a little bit better, it'd see a lot of play.
Yeah, yeah. Something, you know, just one piece of it probably is just not quite there. In the Informers' case, probably the gold cost.
Yes, there's something holding it back.
If it was one cheaper, it probably would see play. Or even if it had one more strength, it would probably see some play.
But yeah, so whether it's cost or icons or effects or traits or whatever, there's just a little bit of something that's going to keep it from being in pretty much any decks.
Yep.
It's kind of card. It might be in your rough draft, but it's probably not going to make it through to the final cup.
Almost certainly getting cut.
And then, I mean, there really is only one F card in the game.
That's all I can think of right
There's
now.
There's only one. And that card is obviously
without his beard.
I mean, it's just an all-around atrocious card, and there's really no reason why it should even be in a rough draft of a deck.
Yeah, exactly. And
I think if someone were to play against me, they might win the game because I would be incapacitated by laughing. I would not be able to handle it.
I may actually have to try this strategy against you.
Okay.
I'm very curious to tell the listeners if it works.
I hope so. That's actually a trick. I'm just trying to trick you into playing bad cards, Will.
I'm going to tell them it worked regardless of whether it did or not.
I hope you do.
I may not even actually play a game. I'm just going to tell them it worked.
Did it work?
Don't tell the listeners.
I won't
but tell. It worked.
I won't tell anyone.
Okay, good.
But yeah, so F cards are just, I mean, the bottom of the barrel. They're not going to see play.
Yeah.
Period.
So there's the grading scale.
Yes.
And now on to the pack, I think. Yeah, this is kind of exciting. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff in this one.
There's some stuff, all right.
Okay, do you want the first card?
You can have the first one.
Okay. The first card is a Lanny unique character. This is Paxter Redwin. He's a 4-cost, 3-strength, intrigue, and power icon character with a naval enhancement on the power icon. He also has a noble crest. He's a Lord, Captain, and House Redwin. And as a response, after you win initiative, add 2 gold tokens from the treasury to your gold pool. He's alright.
He is alright.
I'm putting him... Well, you know, I'm thinking of some decks. Sorry, I should stay away from the letter grade being my first thought.
Yes.
But, you know... I could see some decks. I've heard some mention of using him with shadow stuff, which I think is pretty cool.
Yep.
You skew your deck toward higher initiative.
And then they give the option to bring shadow characters out, like in the draw phase, or before marshalling.
Yeah, which I think gives you some flexibility with stuff like the Pyromancer's Apprentice.
Yes, absolutely.
To almost certainly knock off locations. So that's pretty cool. And, you know, there's some other shadow stuff that would be okay. Some of the shadow's events... You know, I could see you maybe being able to come up with some stuff and things like that. And, you know, there's some possibilities here, but it's not blowing me away
by any means.
It's nice that he has a naval crest for...
A noble crest, you mean?
Naval enhancement, really, is what I'm going to say, for Lannister. You know, because one of the characters that we saw in the first pack only had it conditionally based on having power on it for the infamy. So I like that well enough. If the captain trait did anything in particular right now, maybe it would be useful.
I still have hope that since this is a cycle about boats and the sea, that maybe captain will do something eventually.
You know, I really wish the secondary theme of this set was actually prostitutes or brothels.
Yeah, that'd be pretty great.
Because then it could be boats and hoes. In fact, that could have been Martell's theme. Since
boats and hoes.
Since they don't have the boats, they could have the hoes.
Love it.
Yep. But anyway, yeah, so final idea on Paxter. He could go up, I'll admit, as the series, cycle goes, and some more things come out that interact with that. But right now, I'm putting him at a C. You know, he's not impressing me, but he's not... particularly poorly costed.
I'm going to stick him in a C-.
Okay.
And that there really isn't anything wrong with him, but he does... I mean, if you want to take advantage of him, he demands that you skew your plots in a certain direction that maybe the deck you're playing doesn't want to go.
I can see that, yeah.
So, I mean, on his own, there's nothing wrong with Paxter Redwin, but he is absolutely not a spectacular character. And to take full advantage of him, he makes choices for you that you may not want to make.
I could see that. I could see that. You may have talked me into lowering my ratings.
I almost gave him a D, so.
Wow.
You talked me into giving him a C.
Really? Okay. Well, fair enough then. Maybe we'll just both agree to go with that C minus. Yes.
Next up is a unique Lanny location, the Arbor Queen. It's a one-cost warship with the text any phase. Kneel Arbor Queen to choose a character. Until the end of the phase, that character gets plus one strength for each gold token in your gold pool. It's really all right.
At best.
At best, all right. If you aren't playing anything, then you can probably give a character a pretty decent strength boost. But then you're also not playing anything.
Yeah, well, or, you know, depending on how you construct the Lanny deck, you may have a good bit of gold sitting around. You know, depending on how those decks go, some of them can have 3-4 gold sitting around, and those aren't even the decks that are built around trying to go crazy with Tywin,
mm-hmm.
or Daven, for that matter. Those decks probably have a lot more around. But those decks also don't really care too much about challenges.
Yeah.
So I'm not exactly sure where Arbor Queen fits there. It's cheap, at least.
Mm-hmm. And it is a warship, so it does allow you a little bit of shenanigans with floodwaters and river plots.
Right. That was about my best thought so far, was if you desperately want to do something with the river plots out of Lannister.
Which I really can't see why you would want to, but, you know, to each their own.
Yeah. It's a possibility.
It is. The Arbor Queen, really just not doing much for me. I'm going to give it a D.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it a D as well. It's not unplayable, I'll admit, but I just don't see it doing anything useful.
No, I can't see it making it into a deck I would play.
Okay, moving on quickly from that one.
Yes, there's not much to say about it.
Something I think much cooler. We've got another Lannister unique warship location. This is Lionstar. For one gold during the dominance phase, kneel Lionstar to move up to two gold tokens from your gold pool to Lionstar. Any number of gold tokens instead if you want to challenge with a participating naval attacker this round. And then any phase, kneel Lionstar to move any number of gold tokens from it to your gold pool. I actually really dig Lionstar as a way to shuffle your income around to different phases. And I think it's probably going to be an easier way to do some of the same tricks that Paxter would let you do.
I can definitely see that. I mean, it's definitely a neat card. I will give it that. It does, I mean, to take full advantage of it, I clearly do have to have gold left over, which, I mean, most Lanny decks probably will, but it's not a guaranteed. I mean, most of the time I'm striving to use all of my gold for characters or card effects or whatever I'm wanting to do. It does give you, I guess, it makes you not feel as bad about wasting gold if you have Lionstar out, but I don't really feel like you should be striving to not spend all of your gold.
Right. I mean, one thought I heard, and I'm going to admit this is not my initial thought with it. This I picked up from listening to the Team Covenant podcast, because they hit on their review before us, because we're not as flexible with our schedule, I think. But Robert over there, who plays a lot of Lanny as well, made a point that I think is pretty solid about Lionstar, in that it plays extremely well with your own Valor. Or plays very poorly against the opponent's Valor, because Lanny already has some kind of dominance in the hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's got the intrigue challenges to lower the opponent's hand, draw to increase the size of their own and whatnot. So they generally have a little bit of an edge when it comes to those Valor plays anyway.
True.
If that Valor is 3-4 turns into the game and you've been able to set aside even just one gold per round on the Lionstar, suddenly, you know, your Valor turn whenever you need to play Valor, you're dropping all that gold back in with Lionstar. You already had the hand size. Now you've got, you know, 5-6 gold instead of just that two. I think that is actually pretty relevant use to get out of Lionstar.
I actually hadn't thought of it like that.
Yeah. No, I was very impressed with that thought whenever I heard it. So that sort of thought really bumps Lionstar up.
That's
to me.
True. I'll agree there. The one thing that does still turn me off to it is to take full advantage of it. You know, if there is a turn where you don't need to spend any gold, you're already ahead in board position, unless you do have a naval a character with enable enhancement in play, and you can win a challenge with them as enable attackers, you can't take the full advantage of it. And so far, Lannister is, I mean, not as behind as like Martell is on the naval front, but they are far from the top of the heap.
Right. I mean, yeah, all things said, especially with the limitations that are there on the card, I think I would still just give it a C. But just with the acknowledgement that I do like some of the situations where it is very useful.
I'm actually going to... This might make for a boring episode, because I'm actually going to echo your C. It's just... It's a fine card sometimes.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that whole echoing thing. Yeah, I'd already been thinking of it myself, but Twin to Dan on the FFG boards pointed out more publicly that, yeah, the episodes do tend to be a bit more exciting when Greg and I are on the show together, because we disagree far more often.
Mm-hmm.
You and I think, tend to rate things and look at segments of the game much more similarly than Greg does.
I can see that. But then again, I also, Greg and I tend to see things rather similarly also, so maybe I'm just impacted by whoever's around.
Yeah, exactly. You're just a chameleon here. Yes.
I blend in.
Mm-hmm. Dear Lord, I hope I never let you host just with you and Daryl.
That'd be awful. Like, just terrible.
Exactly.
All right. Next up, we're out of Lannister, heading into Greyjoy with a Greyjoy character, the Ironborn Marauder. 2-cost, non-unique dude. 2-strength military icon with a naval enhancement and power icon. Ironborn and Raider. I think this is what the youth are calling a French vanilla card.
Indeed. Which is, I think, doubly amusing in our game, because a Mr. Nate French has worked on it before. Now, I don't believe he was involved with this set. I think this one was Damon.
I believe so.
It still amuses me to call cards French vanilla.
Yes.
In case you're curious, that's a term that Mark Rosewater over at Wizards of the Coast uses for, you know, almost plain Jane characters in Magic that just have a keyword and not, you know, some sort of ability.
I didn't know it was him. I thought it was the youth that were saying that. All the teenagers with their shenanigans.
My bad. Yeah, it's definitely Mark Rosewater. Oh, he's okay. So not a youth.
But yeah, with the Ironborn Marauder, he's a solid chump.
Yeah, reasonable cost, strength, you know, and icons there. Having the naval enhancement is nice. That's essentially the key word in quotes here, because I still say they are basically keywords for most intents and purposes. Not rules text. I understand that.
They are not actually keywords.
Yes.
But they work similarly too.
Conceptually.
Yes.
And he has 2 traits. Ironborn is very solid for a number of effects.
Oh, yeah.
Raider, he fills in. They've been looking for some more cheap raiders, I think.
Cheap and efficiently costed raiders.
Yeah.
At that, which he definitely is.
So I think he just slots in very nicely without being impressive.
Oh, yeah, no, he is not a power character by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. This is, you know, if I were to give him a card grading, which unfortunately I have to.
Yes.
Or maybe fortunately, I'm not sure. I hate to say it, but he's just going to be another C card. But that's where I have to say, most cards should be in that range. He's just very much what I expect.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I mean, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone that wouldn't rate him as a C on an A to F scale.
Yeah.
He is just all-around average.
Yeah, just the nice thing being that he fills, particularly for people that want to do the Raider stuff, he does fill a hole that they've been looking for. So, yeah, that, you know, some folks may play him a B, but...
In the right deck, he could be fine. I mean, again... Even in the right deck, he's never going to be like a monstrous board presence. It's going to alter the entire course of the game.
Right.
But I mean, if people are playing Raider decks, like I know I have seen people talk about, I've never actually seen one played, but, you know, like Nedley or Theme Raider decks, or Greyjoy Black Sails, I think is where you'll see him most often.
Oh, totally.
At least until Greyjoy Black Sails gets some...
to help
some
the Black Sails around.
Yeah, I mean, if Greyjoy gets some better, cheaper naval characters... He might be replaced in Black Sails decks, but as of right now, if you're playing Greyjoy Black Sails, he's probably borderline auto-include.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm certain for Greyjoy Black Sails. I'm betting he probably... He will probably remain that way. It's hard for me to imagine Greyjoy getting a, like, cheaper, more efficient naval crest, or sorry, naval enhancement guy out of the set.
Yeah, so I mean, he really is just a solid C, and I'd be shocked if anyone were to give him more or less just in general.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the next card, still in Greyjoy. Now, this is a card you already heard us talk about a good little bit when he went up as part of a spoiler article on the main site. But just to give a recap, this is the Reader. He is a unique Greyjoy character, 3/3, with an intrigue and a power icon and a naval enhancement on that intrigue. He also has a learned crest and is an Ironborn in House Harlaw. And as a response, after you win an unopposed challenge in which a unique Greyjoy character participated, choose one, draw one card, or discard the top three cards of each opponent's deck. Limit once per phase. And then, of course, this is a card designed by the 2011 European Jazz Champion, Marty Foz Hernandez. Hopefully I didn't goof up his name terribly.
I don't think, I mean, it reads fairly clearly. So.
Okay, good.
I don't think you did, but you may have. Will you jerk?
We'll see.
But yeah, I mean, like Will said, we have talked about the Reader before. Pretty much all of our previous conversations about it are still valid. He's definitely a good card for Greyjoy to get. You'll see a lot of the Reader.
Yeah, yeah. Fills in very solidly with the Ironborn trait and that learned crest. Has an icon that they can always use a little more help in.
The intrigue icon, Greyjoy does not have a lot of that.
Gives them some card advantage with the draw capabilities there. Just very solid without being game-breaking. I dig him. An interesting note that I didn't notice, I think, when we were talking about him before, is that he's limited once per phase. Mm-hmm. So with some other cards available in the game, maybe one that we'll see later in this chapter pack.
Maybe.
You might be able to use him multiple times in one turn.
Yes.
Which is potentially pretty cool.
So when push comes to shove, I'm going to end up giving the Reader a B+. He may be in the auto-include or near-auto-include level for Greyjoy, but he's not game-breaking in and of himself. He's a solid character with a solid ability. I mean, for the most part, he really might as well just read, draw one card when you win a challenge, an unopposed challenge with a unique Greyjoy character.
Right.
I can't, as I said in the previous episode we talked about him, unless I'm already draw-capped, or I'm playing a dedicated mill deck, which I'm not going to play, he's just card draw, which Greyjoy desperately needs.
Yeah, yeah. Because they need that so badly right now and really don't have a whole lot of great other options, I think I'm tempted to put him in the A- range.
Really?
But he really doesn't have the impact of a Mira, so I think I'm going to have to go with the B+.
Okay.
Yeah.
One more thing that I did want to point out was that the naval enhancement on his intrigue icon may not be as relevant as people might think initially, just because of the way the naval enhancement works. To take advantage of the specific enhancement, you already have to have a character in that challenge type. And because Greyjoy is so low on intrigue characters, more often than not, the naval enhancement probably just won't matter. If you're going to use him in an intrigue challenge, you'll just use him as one of your attackers or defenders. I mean, it's not terribly often that you do have enough other intrigue dudes in Greyjoy to be able to declare a different attacker or defender and then also shoot him in later.
Yeah, I can see that. Fair enough.
All right, next up is a unique Greyjoy location, the Longship Golden Storm. That's a really funny name.
I mean, you know what it's talking about, right?
Yes. Yes, okay. I do. Okay. That is a 2-cost location, like I said. It's another warship, so the third one in the pack. Your Holy Crest characters gain a military icon. Is it sexed? So I'm sure this card is Will all hot and bothered, but I'm actually really unimpressed by it.
Really? You really think I'm all that excited about it? I'm going to say, unfortunately, I'm not.
Really?
Yeah. I want to like it. I love Holy Crest.
Okay, so your logic is winning out over your... I don't want to say man crush on Holy Crest characters.
Well, see, the problem is, the reason for my man crush on Holy Crest characters Well, there's a couple reasons. One of them is Aaron Dampier.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that matters for this is because of the Power of Faith plot,
okay.
which is phenomenal to make them not kneel to attack. But what it also does is give all the Holy Crest characters you have a military icon, which means for those two key turns that you can use Power of Faith, Golden Storm is essentially blank. If it also said something like counts as two strength during dominance, or, you know, it could be fairly piddly, whatever the other thing was, I would look at this and go, okay, you know, on my non Power of Faith turns, this is going to be awesome for me. On those two turns, okay, well, at least it still does something.
Mm-hmm.
I can work with this. It'll be pretty handy. But as is, it is blank on the two turns I care about, and not that exciting on the others. And I just... that really pushes it down for me. I'm going to go ahead and jump out there and give it a rating. I feel like this is a D.
I was going to go as far as, say, a D-minus, maybe.
Really? Wow.
I think this card is really unimpressive. As the game has been speeding up in general, at least in my experience... I mean, those two Power of Faith turns will be like half of the game.
Right, right. And because of the push towards a mm-hmm. speedier game, that not kneeling to attack
is a lot more relevant.
Huge, yeah, yes. And relevant. So it's not like you want to, if you're doing a Holy Deck, it's not like you want to pass those up.
No, yeah, Holy Deck would still want to play those.
Yeah. So that just Golden Storm is just going to be blank so much of the game. Yeah. I want to like it, but I can't. So, yeah, I think I'm going to stick with a D.
Dude, well, how much would you love this card if it read your Holy Crest characters gain stealth?
Yeah, it would be amazing. It could be...
Literally anything but... that's not an icon.
Right, yeah. Damn near anything other than icon. It could give them a learned crest, for all I care. And I would be... Oh, okay, I can figure out some stuff to do here. Without it being blank for possibly half the game.
Yep. But yeah, no. Launch of Golden Storm is, unfortunately, not a particularly good card.
No. Maybe if there were some Holy Raiders, and then you could and then on Power of Faith turns, you could still use Golden Storm to kneel for that guy that lets you kneel warships to lower the cost of Raiders.
Well, don't even try.
Yeah. No, I got.
Just move on.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds like a good idea. So I guess I am moving on. Next card's
yes,
me,
are.
Isn't it? We are switching houses again. This time we're jumping over to Baratheon for a non-unique character named the River... Sorry, just River Runner. The is not part of the name.
No.
It is 2 cost for 2 strength and has a power icon with a naval enhancement. It's an ally and a smuggler and has Vigilant. And as a response, after River Runner stands for Vigilant, it gains an Intrigue icon until the end of the phase. I've got to say I dig River Runner quite a bit, actually.
I mean, he's all right.
Cheap Vigilant, I think, is quite good. Vigilant itself, I think, is one of the stronger keywords. Certainly out of the house specific, mm-hmm. I'm tempted to put it right behind the Ambush.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it's number one.
Yeah.
It's definitely Ambush. But I'm tempted to put it in the number two spot.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the grand scheme of things, as far as keywords go, I'd still put it in the top quarter. It's within those top few.
Yeah.
It's really good. You keep hammering home challenges. When you get to throw in that extra strength in order to make it harder for the opponent to win, and then when you... win yourself, they stand up so that you're not really out anything from having to have thrown them in.
Yeah, he's basically +2 strength in power and intrigue challenges as long as you do the power challenge first.
Yeah, see, that's the tricky part, is that he does kind of dictate the order you need to do your challenges.
Yes, and similar to Paxa Redwine, things that dictate the choices I can make in the game, I am generally less fond of.
Yeah. Now, because... the generally accepted sort of theory is that you always make the intrigue first.
Yes.
And then probably military.
And then power last. And he throws that off.
River Runner, now, all he does for sure is say that intrigue needs to probably be last.
Mm-hmm.
You could still make the military first if you want, then the power, then the intrigue. Or you could, you know, make power, military, then intrigue. You know, you can still shake some of that up. Just your intrigue is definitely not going to be the first mm-hmm. anymore. Which is, you know, kind of awkward.
Yeah.
I'll admit. But doesn't feel like a game breaker to me.
Plus, it's not a game breaker, but it does dictate what you should do.
Right.
I mean, if you are going through and doing the, I'm going to jump back to a fairly old for an older episode here and do the mental shortcuts.
Right.
Of doing your intrigue challenge first. I mean, at that point, he's just a 2-cost, 2-strength power icon guy that's going to stand back up to defend power.
Not unreasonable.
No, it is. It's not unreasonable. It's not. Particularly good.
I mean, and there's a couple other things worth noting on mm-hmm. him. He's a smuggler, which I think is pretty relevant for a couple things. There's the new shadow smuggler that I can't think of the name
of. The Summer Sea Corsair.
Yes. So you get a river runner out and then bring him out of shadows. Now you're looking at the top two cards, yeah. Which I think is pretty solid. The deeper you can dig with that guy, the better he's going to be. And he works nicely then with this river runner because the river runner is fairly cheap.
Yep.
What the River Runner also works with very nicely because he's cheap is the Salvador Song that we've seen spoiled.
It has already been spoiled.
Right. Where you can pay the 2 extra gold to blow something, blow up a location when they come into play. And so the cheaper the printing cost of the smuggler is,
the better that
ability is. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'll definitely admit as we get more smugglers tech in this cycle, or maybe even in this pack.
Hey yo.
He will get progressively better and better and better.
Yeah. And also, don't forget, because he has that naval enhancement, I mean, probably the second best naval house that we've seen so far behind Greyjoy is Baratheon.
True.
So that gives them some options with black sails. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard a lot of people talking about black sails out of Baratheon
because Baratheon sucks.
Out of Greyjoy. But I'm just saying there's some possibilities there that may be worth exploring.
There are possibilities there.
I think it's a very potential laden card, though I have to acknowledge that ally trait.
Yeah.
It does kind of suck, but at least, hey, you know, he's fairly chud-like, so it's not a terrible loss if you have to lose him.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just going to jump right into it again and again say he's another C.
He's a C? I really love... I feel like he's got enough going for him. I want to give him a B-.
Really?
I think he's one of the most solid all-around non-uniques that Baratheon's seen in a while.
That's true. I guess talking about Baratheon is, I mean, if they get a good card, it's kind of an enormous boon for the house.
Yeah, yeah, it's cause for celebration.
Yeah, if you are looking at specific Baratheon cards, then yeah, he's probably a little better than a C, just in the Baratheon vacuum.
Yeah.
But outside of that, like, if he was in a different house, I don't think he'd be...
I mean,
as impressive.
And that does color ratings for sure. You know, because the way Thrones out of house system works, it's much more relevant to rate things solely within house.
True.
You can play otherwise, but that's not generally the default.
Yes. But yeah, so I mean, I'm still going to stick with my C for River Runner. He's fine most of the time, but he's never going to do particularly much for you than just be a +2 strength buff and a couple challenges.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is. Fine.
It's okay.
Yeah. Moving on. Here's this other smuggler card in the pack I was talking about literally 2 minutes ago.
It's like foreshadowing.
Just like foreshadowing. I'm really good at it. I took an English class in high school.
Wow. Well done. Did you pass?
No, of course not.
That's what I thought.
A unique Baratheon character. Another Sir Davos Seaworth. I think this is the 4th Davos.
I think you're right. Yeah.
He's 4-cost, 3-strength, military icon with a naval enhancement and intrigue icon. He is a smuggler and captain. And then he has renown and melee. In addition to that, knelt smuggler characters you control count their strength toward dominance.
I mean, he seems pretty cool to me.
He's a neat card. One thing that I do want to specifically mention is something that probably doesn't get a lot of... love on our show is how Nedley this Sir Davos is when you read the flavor text. Because the flavor text is specifically referencing the Davos out of A Clash of Kings when he's smuggling Melisandre in to get all Shadow Baby up on this bitch.
Right.
To assassinate... my mind just went blank. It's in Storm's End.
Yeah.
I don't know. The guy
remember the name of this castle and all that jazz.
Yeah, the guy in Storm's End. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, I mean, him specifically not having the knight trait because he is, like, I mean, the flavor text literally is, tonight I am no knight, tonight I am Davos the smuggler again.
Yep. Pretty awesome.
Yep.
He is both not a knight and he is indeed a smuggler.
True. Yes.
According to his traits.
However, once we actually get into the card itself, he's a neat card, but I don't think I'd play him over at least one of the other Davoses in most decks. He is a 4-cost, 3-strength character, which Baratheon has oh so many of.
He's in a tough cost bracket.
Yes, he is. He does have an entry icon that a lot of those characters don't have, which is relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And then he does also help with some dominance trickery by having your smuggler characters still count towards.
Bizarrely, that ability will rarely work with River Runner.
Because he'll usually be standing.
Yeah, but if the River Runner's standing, it's counting for dominance anyway, so I guess it's a wash.
Yes.
But I just found that interesting. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I mean, this Davos, the Davos that I would almost always play over him is the, I think it was the TOC Davos, the one that dupes himself with the top card of your deck, and he has stealth.
That's okay. I mean, that's pretty solid. He's in a tough card.
Yes.
Card cost bracket, I admit. But there are a couple things that I like about him. Because he has renown and melee, like, at that 3-strength mm-hmm. Slot, with melee, you almost certainly win any challenge you dedicate him to. Melee, in general, I still see as pretty underplayed around here. So you don't have to worry most of the time about running up against an opposing melee mm-hmm. character in a challenge, which would throw things off. And, you know, with the naval enhancements, that can do some funky things. But I still think melee is going to be very effective with naval characters being added into challenges. Mm-hmm. He's still going to win it more often than not, which means he gets that renown.
True.
Then he lets all of your smugglers count for dominance, which, even if it's just him, is already a solid boost towards gaining dominance. If you've got one or two other smugglers on the table, you almost certainly have dominance locked down, which means that Davos is a pretty respectable 2-power a turn.
I do want to point out one thing that, and this may change if Baratheon Black Sails does take off, but at this time, probably the best Baratheon deck, which is kind of laughable because the best Baratheon deck isn't as good as an average deck in a lot of other houses, probably is the Baratheon House of Dreams deck with the Bera Iron Throne, which makes his...
Maybe. That took a big hit with the refugees.
That's true.
The House of Dreams wall deck may be better now.
I mean, I'm still not fully convinced of that. Baratheon does have other cheap chuds that won't be direct replacements for the refugees, but they do have other guys. And in that deck, this Davos is a 4-cost, 3-strength, 2-icon renowned melee guy, which, again, isn't bad, but there's a lot of other 4-cost, 3-strength, 2-icon renowned guys I'd play over him.
Okay. Well, push comes to shove, then. What are you going to rate him?
I'm feeling, honestly, a D+.
D+, that low.
I just, he'll be in a lot of rough drafts. I don't think he'll make the final cut in most decks.
I think he's going to help push those smuggler decks, and I think those look right now like they're going to provide some tools that will really help Baratheon out of some of the issues it's having down at the bottom of the heap.
Mm-hmm.
So I think people are going to want to include at least a solid sub-theme of smuggler stuff in Baratheon decks for a while here.
I mean, I'm gonna put an asterisk next to my grade.
Man,
if smugglers get a lot better, he could get a lot better.
Yeah, I don't think I would make him as low as you're looking at. I'm leaning towards giving him a C+.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand where you're coming from, and he may be a C+ card after the next 3 or 4 packs, as if smugglers do get really good.
If they get really good, he's probably going to get bumped up to a B.
Maybe.
Alright. Fair enough. Alright. What's up next here? We've got another Baratheon card. This is a Barrow Warship, Black Betha.
So many warships!
Uh-huh. It's 1-cost again. I'm sensing a theme with all of the warships here. It is a response ability. After you win a challenge in which you have declared a naval attacker, Neo Black Betha to attach the top card of your discard pile face down to a unique Baratheon character as a duplicate, limit once per round.
Now, I think this card actually does have some promise.
It has some potential. You have to have that naval attacker, though.
That's true.
Otherwise, it doesn't do anything.
Yes.
You have to have cards in the discard pile. You also have to have a unique in play. There's a lot of have-to-haves.
I mean, well, I didn't say it was a good card. I said it has potential.
I'll admit, in the right situation, yeah, it's going to just give you that infinite claim soak. It's going to keep that key character. I don't know, Defender's Mel, for instance, mm-hmm. just for an example. Or maybe No Shadows Bob or something.
I mean, I was going to jump back to this deck that you may have heard of back from 2011 that won Gen Con that was all about duping up No Shadows Robert, like you were saying.
It was, but does that deck have room to fit in the naval characters?
Well, that deck doesn't exist anymore. But could there possibly be a new deck that wants to do something similar to that? Maybe.
I still think that the Black Betha is probably going to a little too much effort to get that effect. I'm not going to rule it out as being good in some games. But I don't think I can personally give it better than a D. Because I think it slots in right there with the collectors like we were talking about. It has that potential where you look at it and you go, oh, I could see games where this would be awesome. But there's a lot of hoops to jump through. And as you start thinking about it, there's probably more situations where it's just not going to do what you want.
I mean, well, I'm also going to give it a D. But, again,
that's just because you want to agree with me.
No, it's not because I want to agree with you. I was going to give it a D before you started talking.
Oh.
But I do think the card does have a lot of potential. And there may be a deck out there that may be able to abuse it. Again, a lot of maze. But Uber character decks do seem like they are kind of on the comeback with the new...
With a lot of the new restrictions. Yes. I can see that, yeah.
So, it's possible that it may do something awesome. Again, a lot of maze.
Yeah.
That's a D card for you.
Well, there you go. Pretty much to a T, huh?
Yep. Next up, we are out of Baratheon into Stark with a non-unique Stark character, the Northern Sailor. He's 2 cost, 1 strength, with a military icon and a naval enhancement on that military icon. He is both an ally and House Manderly. With the response, after you win a challenge in which Northern Sailor participated by 4 or more total strength, discard it to choose an opponent. That opponent must choose and kill a character he or she controls, if able.
I mean, they couldn't word it this way because of the timing, you know, being a response and all. But effectively what that says is after you win a challenge, he's in by 4 or more, raise your claim by 1.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it ends up with...
Assuming it's a military, I suppose. You could give him another icon
and then, yeah, swing him into something else and kill someone.
But I love the sound of that. Mm-hmm. I think that sounds great. He's not the cheapest thing in the world, but reasonable, I think. I'm willing to pay 2 gold to get extra claim and kill some, you know, once my claim is at like 2 or 3, I'm definitely killing characters of theirs that are worth more than the 2 I invested in him.
Yeah.
I would love it if it was 2 strength to help push through that 4, but
he does have the same thing like we said earlier with the Andrith, the Unsmiling. The naval enhancement does actually help push through those win by X or more cards.
Yeah. Totally.
Because you can wait until, again, assuming they don't have any naval defenders or any naval characters of their own, you wait until after they declare defenders, and if you're already ahead by 4 or if you're only ahead by 3, you can then swim him in.
Yeah. I like that terminology. I hadn't heard that before.
No, I just thought of it.
Well done. You know, and I don't know if you've heard of this card before, but there is a Stark card around that seems pretty popular, that seems to win challenges by 4 or more every time it attacks.
What's that?
And it tends to attack without ever kneeling so. I think that's Northern Cavalry Flying.
Never heard of it.
Really?
Never heard of it.
That's pretty amazing. You ought to look that up.
Well, I've heard of that.
It's a good card.
I know. I'm aware.
And, you know, with the cavalry flanks floating around at 5 strength with deadly...
And not kneeling. There's not a lot of incentive to defend those challenges.
Yeah, exactly. So that puts your opponent in a pretty tough spot if you've got a Northern Sailor and the cavalry flank around. Because you attack with just the cavalry flank by itself. Now they have to decide, do I block or not? If I block, I lose something for deadly.
Mm-hmm.
and depending on how things shake down, maybe still claim, right? If I don't block, they jump the sailor in, and I'm killing for claim and an extra character for the sailor's ability. I think that's going to be a very strong combination. I like Northern Sailor an awful lot.
I do like Northern Sailor. As you said, he is a little expensive. I mean, 2 gold is not an insignificant investment. And he does have an ally trait, which, since you didn't point it out, I was going to.
He does. But, you know, if my opponent desperately needs to spend their time dissensioning my Northern Sailor instead of, oh gosh, I don't know, Kindly Man, because, I don't know, Kindly Man plus the Northern Sailor is going to be amazing, just so you know.
That's true.
If you hadn't thought of that yet, recurring him over and over to use via the Kindly Man is going to be amazing.
That's pretty cool. I'll admit.
You know, if they want to do that, more power to them. I'm not out all that much.
You see, I feel like the ally trait in Stark is maybe a little more severe than it is in a lot of other houses. Because in Lanny, they have a lot of, like, other, you know, good, important characters that are also allies. Stark doesn't have as many. There are still several targets, but not as many, and a lot of them aren't necessarily the really good characters, or even the middling good characters. So, I mean, that puts Northern Sailor is probably actually near the top of the good Stark allies.
Maybe. I don't know. I put him behind Knight of Harrenhal.
Oh, true. Fair enough.
And the Kindly Man. Both of those are fairly popular.
The Kindly Man is not particularly popular, Will.
Maybe.
I have literally never played against the Kindly Man deck.
Really?
Never.
Should get Joe to dig his out. It's pretty fun.
Okay.
But in the end, you know, I admit, yes, that ally is a downside. I just think his upsides far outweigh that. I think he's going to be solid in just a straight up Stark deck. Just a general Jack of all trades Stark deck. I think he's going to be great if Stark wants to try out a Black Sails deck, because he's a fairly cheap naval icon to throw in for that. I think he's going to be great in a siege deck to help clear out the opponent's board and force through those military challengers. And those decks, even more than the others, for sure, are running the cavalry flanks.
True.
I think he's going to be amazing in Kindly Man decks for the ability to keep recurring him, then win the military challenge and up your claim that way. I think he's going to be great in a ton of Stark builds, so I'm giving him a very solid B.
Really? I'm still sticking with the C, but I understand where you're coming from with the B.
Okay.
I agree he will be in a lot of Stark builds, but he's just not, at least in my mind, as powerful as a B character probably should end up being.
All right. Agree to disagree, then.
Agree to disagree.
We'll see how we go maybe on the other two Stark cards.
We'll see. We'll probably agree on them. They're pretty both sides of the spectrum.
Yeah. Okay, so this one's me then, eh?
Yes, it is.
This is another Stark character. This is the White Harbor Captain. It is a 3-cost, 2-strength, power icon with a naval enhancement character. It is a captain and House Manderly. And as a response, after you win a challenge in which White Harbor Captain participated by 4 or more total strength, claim 1 power for your house.
Boring.
He's kind of blah. That 3 for 2, always kind of hurts.
Yes, I mean, if you look at it just as like looking at the cards, yes, it's only 1 more gold for 1 more strength than the Northern Sailor, which you might think is like an even trade. But I have a lot harder time. Playing 3 gold characters and 2 gold characters. I don't know about you, Will.
The ability is not going to give card advantage. Now, sorry, I guess the Northern Sailor is probably not giving card advantage either, because you lose a sailor and you lose a character. Yeah. But you are very likely, between that and your regular claim, gaining some resource advantage there for sure. White Harbor Captain is not doing that, which is a bummer. Now, you only win the game based off of power.
True.
So that does help. And I do want to point out, compared to some other stuff, like some of the Greyjoy guys that you win a challenge
and discard stuff,
whatnot, they claim the power.
Yeah.
In this case, the captain
claims it on your house, right.
Yeah. There are some situations because the opponent can steal it, but by and large, I would still say that's better
in general
because of the resets floating around and different things. Mostly, it's still better to have it on the house card, but it just doesn't feel like it's quite enough.
Yeah. I mean, it is, I mean, similar to the Northern Sailor raising your claim and power challenges, except that you aren't stealing it from your opponent.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean,
Which is kind of awkward.
Yeah, it is getting you to your goal of 15 power faster, but it's not slowing your opponent down anymore.
Yeah. If you did straight up take that power from your opponent, then I would probably be able to get behind it. I think that would make a much bigger difference,
mm-hmm.
because you would be actively hurting your opponent as you did it.
Yeah.
And I think I would be willing to put that in a solid... I don't think it would fit Stark's themes quite as well as the Sailor, but I'd probably be willing to give it, like, a solid C in that case.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I'm not quite feeling it. I feel it's very similar, again, to the Informers that we're talking about. That, you know, if it just had the one more strength or the one less cost that would be playable... He feels like, you know, if he just had, like, a keyword or one more strength or one less cost, then I would look at him and go, okay, yeah. Yeah, that I could, I'd try that out. But he doesn't.
You're right. He does not.
So I'm feeling a D.
I'm also feeling a D, but I'm actually going to go ahead and give him a minus.
Really? See, yeah. I was considering giving him a plus because he does have that naval icon out of Stark, and... You know, black sails is that thing everybody wants to experiment around with. So he is going to be necessary for a Stark deck that wants to try black sails.
There are better cards to enable Stark black sails. Maybe even better cards in this pack.
Like the Northern Sailor?
Like the Northern Sailor.
Oh, okay.
Or other cards in this pack.
I can't imagine what cards those are.
I can't either. No, the White Tower Captain is just really, really unimpressive. That's all I have to say about him.
Yeah. Agreed.
The next card is not unimpressive.
One might say it's the antithesis to being unimpressive.
You might. It is a non-unique Stark location, the White Harbor Droman. It is 2 cost with a warship trait, and then as an effect challenges Neo White Harbor Droman to choose a character until the end of the phase. That character gains renown and a naval enhancement on each of its icons. I think this card is really good, and you're going to see it in a lot of Stark decks.
That's pretty awesome. You know, there's this card. I can't quite remember the name of it, but it's 4 cost for 5 strength with deadly, and it doesn't mm-hmm. need to attack if the opponent has an agenda. What is the name of that? I feel like this would be pretty good with that card.
Is it Sansa Stark?
I don't think it's Sansa Stark. No. I think it's Rickon.
Rickon, okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Rickon Stark.
It's not Rickon Stark, Will.
No, it's definitely...
It's Cavalier Flank.
It definitely is. And I think the White Harbor Droman is going to be awesome with that.
Yes.
Among other Stark cards, of course.
Most cards.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But that just is going to be a particularly good mm-hmm. one.
Getting double renown, basically, with the 2 challenges.
Oh.
That you're probably going to win, and he's going to get to participate in both.
Yeah. And probably going to be unopposed. So there's some...
Or you're going to be killing dudes.
Options there. Yeah. You know, that just makes it look even more awesome when you want to throw in that Northern Sailor mm-hmm. and stuff. I mean, it's even good with some of the other stuff, like Rickard Karstark.
Yep.
Even King Rob's Host.
Yep.
Any of that stuff that doesn't attack
that you're going to get to use 2 challenges out of.
Uh-huh. It's cool. So siege decks are going to love this.
Oh yeah!
All those characters. This is going to be a huge power boost for them, which is going to be great. But even, you know, it doesn't say that you have to specifically use it on a Stark.
It does not
character.
Say that at all.
So I'm sure there's some other tricks and things that could be thought up. I don't know. I could see myself maybe trying some kind of Stark Brotherhood deck again,
mm-hmm.
And turning the Mad Huntsman into a little naval dude.
Yep,
putting him on a boat.
Mad Huntsman's on a boat,
and then he's stealthy with renown on those 2 challenges.
Yeah.
That's going to be pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good. The White Harbor Droman is just a really solid, good all around card. That, like I said, you're going to see in a lot of Stark decks. When push comes to shove. I initially was considering giving it an A, but I don't think it's quite there, so I'm gonna give it a B plus. It is better than a B card. You'll see it in almost every Stark deck, but it is not quite game changing enough in and of itself.
You know, I think I would agree with that rating. B plus.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite it helps a lot by making your characters very effective, mm-hmm. But it doesn't ever actually win challenges.
It does not.
It doesn't make winning challenges more easily. You have to already have the capability to win those challenges, really.
Mm-hmm.
But it speeds up the game a ton
once you do. Yes, it's wholly dependent on what you have in play. It does empower Stark Black Sails better than really any card they've had so far. But it is just not game changing enough for like Will said, it doesn't make you win challenges any easier. All it does is speed you up.
Yep.
I do have one complaint, is that it only works during the challenge phase. So if you're playing with epic battles, that's kind of lame because you can't use it for them.
Yeah, exactly. That is kind of.
I know the first time I looked at this card, I got really impressed when there's a card that we'll see later on in the pack. Oh. But that it doesn't work with, unfortunately.
Maybe it's good that it doesn't work with that. That might be OP?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I mean, that'd be really good.
Okay, so up next, we move houses again. This time, down to Sandy Dorn for Quentin Martell, who is a unique at 3 cost, 3 strength, a military and a power icon. He is a lord and a knight with stealth and response after Quentin Martell is killed. Claim 2 power for your house. He doesn't feel super impressive, but I like him.
No, yeah. I mean, a 3 cost, 3 strength bicon with a keyword is pretty much always going to be relevant. Not particularly flashy, but relevant.
And two solid to relevant traits.
Yep.
Knight is barely negative, yep. Thanks to a certain start.
It is technically
card.
Negative.
Yes. But it's also got some positive stuff too.
I mean, a little bit.
Versus the negative traits like ally. I mean, there aren't any positive ally effects, are there? Like, allies get +1 strength.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. But yeah, he's pretty solid there. I mean, this is, I think, exactly the sort of unique character that you really only want one copy of.
You
throw the one in the deck, and you see him, and you're happy with it. Something happens, your opponent Valors, Wildfire, whatever, you get a couple power out of the deal, all right, and you move on.
Yep.
Maybe in a melee, maybe that kind of wards off your opponents from attacking you.
Yep, because it means if you military, he was going to kill Quentin and get 2 power.
Yeah, exactly, which seems totally reasonable to me. Looking at Martell's card pool going forward with the summer restriction, I think they still kind of want to look at agendas that give them some card advantage. Yeah, of course, resource advantage via Knights of the Hollow Hill is a very viable option for mm-hmm. them. But with the restriction to so many of their cards and Kings of Summer, they've got a lot of knights. I could see Knights of the Realm replacing.
They have a lot of knights. They don't have a lot of great knights.
And they have a lot of okay.
They have a lot of okay knights.
Knights. Quentin's okay. I mean, you probably don't need a ton of knights to be doing okay with the agenda. We'll see. I don't know. But if you want to explore that with Martell, and I think it's worth exploring, one of Quentin fits in mm-hmm. A-OK.
Yeah. I do, I mean, it is the second version of Quentin that we've seen, right. But seeing as the original version of Quentin we got, it demands such a specific deck type.
Right.
I think that actually is a boon to Quentin, and that if we got another Dark Star that did this, or you know any of the other,
he would have more competition against himself.
Yes,
yeah.
Which I think is relevant. I mean, it's relevant enough for me to mention on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, there is very little competition between Quentin Martells, which you don't have any come with the cost like Roberts or Joffrey's.
Yeah, or even just other Martell characters at this similar kind of mm-hmm. cost and rule.
Yeah.
You know, you've got of course Erez O'Kart. It is very similar mm-hmm. here in its. Stats and everything, and yeah, sure, between those two Quentin's not gonna come out ahead.
Yeah.
But you've also got Harmon Uller, who is vulnerable being an ally. You know, maybe Quentin comes out ahead of him,
probably.
And there's not a whole lot else in that slot. The mm-hmm. new Arya Hota fits into that same kind of area.
Mm-hmm.
There's that Dane army, but yeah, not a whole lot in this bracket, which is also a help.
I agree.
I'm tempted to give him like a B-.
I mean, because
he doesn't have much competition, I think.
I'm still going to stick with a C, but I'm going to add a plus on there.
Okay.
And that, I mean, again, he'll be all right in a lot of decks. But I don't think he'll ever be your MVP. Unless you are at 13 power and someone militaries you, and then you win the game off that.
I mean, there's going to be stories about that.
There, I'm sure there will be.
Or you get to 13. I mean, how
13 in Valor?
How fun is that to flip a Valor when you've got Joffrey in play and a couple lords and ladies on the board? Or, what's his name? The Angry Guy. Yeah. Or, you know, you flip the Winter Festival and stuff. Mm-hmm. He's going to make for some awesome stories.
That's true. I'm still sick with a C+. It's not enough for me to knock him into the B range.
Okay.
Next up is another warship. We've gotten a lot. That's another Martell card. It's unique. It's 2 costs. It's the Meadowlark. It has the text challenges. Neo Meadowlark to choose a challenge icon. Each player in play loses all enhancements on that icon. Now, I do want to mention one thing before we actually start talking about the card. By text on card, they lose that enhancement permanently.
Yep. It just straight up says they lose that enhancement. It specifies nothing else.
Now, we do have a ruling from Damon that it is going to be FAQ'd. But by text on card, it's just gone forever. Never to return. It's supposed to end up being forever. Yeah.
I mean, if it was forever, I could see myself playing Meadowlark if, you know, Black Sails wound up being pretty popular.
Yep.
I could potentially really put a crimp on those decks.
Yep. Just
assuming that it's going to be changed till end of phase. I don't really think Meadowlark's going to be worth it.
I don't think Meadowlark's going to be worth it at all. I mean, even if it was permanent, it's good against one matchup. I mean, not even one matchup, one agenda.
Yeah. And doesn't actually ever keep the characters out of challenges.
It just keeps them from being naval. It
hoses them from triggering a few effects.
Yeah. So
it would be a little bit like if you had a card that said, you know, like, choose an opponent's character. That character loses one trait.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
Maybe once in a decade
that
will do something so that I can win a challenge.
Rarely.
But almost never. Yeah, this may surprise you. I'm leaning towards F. I feel like this is going to have a very similar level of application to Without His Beard.
Yep. I agree with the addendum that, you know, 5 years in the future, if we do get some really bonkers icon enhancements, maybe it'll be worth looking back into.
Right, because it doesn't specify Naval.
Yeah, it specifies so, enhancements in general. And Damon has already said, or I assume it was Damon because he was the article. And,
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that they do intend to use more enhancements in the future.
Right. So Meadowlark will go up.
But
I don't know how much.
May go up. I'm not even saying it will go up.
Oh, I mean, if any more enhancements are added, I say Meadowlark does go up. It just may not be an appreciable amount.
Yeah, fair enough. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, Meadowlark, I'm also going to go ahead and give it an F.
We do agree too much. Damn.
We do. I mean, cards shouldn't suck so much.
I don't know if they suck.
I don't think they do either. The one we just talked
about. We're just really good at... Yeah, it did. Well, let's move on from it.
Let's move on.
Okay, we change houses yet again. This time to Targaryen for the Pentoshi Deckhand, who's a non-unique character for one, with one strength, an intrigue icon... with a naval enhancement on it. He's an ally, and as a response, after Pentoshi Deckhand has been declared as a naval attacker, lower the cost of the next character you put into play using ambush this phase by one. Yeah, it definitely does not say of the next character. It just says of next, which I don't think actually makes it not work properly the way Meadowlark doesn't, but it sure is awkward to see that missing word.
Yeah. You know, believe it or not, Will, I actually like the Pentoshi Deckhand.
I am actually surprised because I like him, but he doesn't, to me, seem like the kind of character that you would like. Despite the stuff we do agree on, I figured this was what you would call subpar.
I mean, I can like subpar things, Will. It doesn't happen often. I like the idea of Pentoshi Deckhand.
Okay.
He's similar to something like True Queen's Harbinger.
Right.
And that, again, it's another card that I like the idea of, but I would never put it into a deck.
You would never put the Harbinger in a deck?
Probably not, no.
Really? Dang. Depends on the Dothraki quotient of the deck, I suppose.
I still don't think.
you know, he's a zero cost, and plus,
well,
you know,
let's not talk a about bunch of car. Cheap let's weenies. Talk about this
hold on. Okay. I'm bringing it around. Plus, a bunch of cheap weenies got knocked out thanks to the refugees. So I see that maybe having a place related to that, the Pintoshi deckhand now. For the ranked deck, fits in nicely into that weenie area. If you are looking at ambushing, you know, essentially every phase, it's pretty reasonable.
I mean, he's basically an extra influence in that case. Right. That's also helping you participate in challenge. Not necessarily win challenges, because the one strength isn't going to do a lot.
Right.
Most of the time.
Now, he does, much like the, the River Runner, he does kind of dictate the order that you do stuff in, though.
He basically makes
which I really figured you would not like.
I don't.
I mean, you've got to do that intrigue before you can even start ambushing in other guys. Because sometimes you want to ambush something in
beforehand
to then make a challenge with that character. He's neat. I like the idea.
Well, Will, I say things are neat kind of insultingly. That's my thing.
Isn't that just precious?
That is pretty precious.
I'm having trouble pinning down a rating in my head on this. I'm leaning towards a D on the deckhand. Because so many of the decks that want to ambush cards, many of those cards are in the 2-cost range, right?
Yes,
the Dragon Knight, the Dragon Thief, the Flame Kissed. Which means that...
Technically, Pintoshi deckhand wouldn't even affect Flamekiss. It just dawned on me that it only affects characters.
Oh, really? Yep, fair enough.
Yeah.
But still, any of that stuff can be handled off of just the Knights of Hollow Hill influence. Mm-hmm. Now, the main ones that are used right now that go past that are going to be
Long Lances.
A few of the Dragons and Long Lances.
Company of the Cat also.
Company of the Cat. So it depends on how heavily some of that stuff gets used. And, you know, depending on what all is going on, if maybe, Queen's Knight suddenly starts making a debut. If there's more stuff in, particularly, I think, the 3-cost ambush range that comes out, for sure. Because then he gives you that one more that you need to go along with Knights of the Hollow Hill.
You only need the Knights of the Hollow Hill and the Pintoshi deck. He is a conditional influence.
Right. But right now, I just don't feel that there's enough 3-cost ambush guys that see play. In the 4-cost range, it starts getting goofier because then you need other influence anyway. Yeah.
I'm actually going to give him a C+, but only because of the fact that I do like the idea of Pintoshi deckhand. Oh. Did I say C+? I meant C-. Yeah. I totally meant C-.
You said C+.
I didn't mean C+.
I'm holding you to C+.
Okay. But no, he's... I like what he's trying to do.
I agree. I agree with that for sure.
Next up, it's my turn, right?
Yep.
Okay. It's another warship.
They really should have just called this something to do with warships. What do you call a bunch of ships?
A fleet?
By God, you're right.
A murder of warships?
A murder of warships.
A gaggle of warships. I'm going to go with a gaggle.
A gaggle. Okay.
This is a unique Targaryen location. Vhagar. That's how you pronounce it. It's a 1-cost. Again, a warship. With the response, after a character enters play under your control, kneel Vhagar, kneel 1 influence to attach the topmost attachment in your discard pile to that character if able. This card is pretty bad.
It's not great. It's not great.
No, it's... I mean, I just described it. Well, it's pretty bad.
I mean, you compare it to Danish Chambers, right?
You can compare it to Daenerys' Chambers.
Well, I mean, that's the comparison that comes to my mind, because they're both recurring attachments.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Vhagar is really only going to work with positive
attachments. It has a very, very, very narrow scope of effect.
Because you really don't want to be putting flame kists on your own.
I would not want to do that most of the time.
Yeah, exactly. And you need the influence to kneel. Now the one,
and it's only once. You do have to kneel Vhagar to do that.
Gotcha. Now the one thing it does have over Danny's, though, the two things, doesn't have to be the target character, and it doesn't have the cost restriction.
True.
But it does say it has to be the topmost attachment, so it has a different restriction.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just below par compared
I mean,
to the easy comparison.
Lady Daenerys' Chambers is significantly better than Vhagar.
Yeah. Yeah, not digging it. It, you know, if there is some crazy deck on down the line in a different house that wants to recur attachments, its own positive attachments for some reason, I don't know, maybe it's doing something crazy like that Robert stuff you were talking about before. Maybe it might have a place in some kind of crazy Shaga combo. But I don't see what that is right now. It would take some further additions to the card pool.
And it is fairly average with Maester Chains.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure it's better than Lady Daenerys' Chambers, but those are some positive attachments that at least did see a decent amount of play.
And you will want them to come back. Unfortunately, you're only going to be able to do that
with Maesters.
When you play a Maester, since it has to attach it, and they have to go.
Except for Apprentice Collar.
Right.
You can put a Prince Collar or anything.
Yep. But, and then once you've got the collar, then you could... No, because you've got to go to the character that
comes into play. Yeah,
it's not going to be great with...
No.
With the chains, either.
I'm going to give Vhagar the hardest D- I can give it. I don't want to give it an F, because there are times that it may do something pretty cool for you.
Yeah.
But it's a really hard D-.
I'm just going to give it like a solid run-of-the-mill D myself. With that slight caveat that I'm going to be looking at it, especially as the card pool grows, to see if I can't figure out some kind of Shaga combo with it. But I don't feel very confident.
Okay. I don't feel confident either.
Okay, back to me.
Yes.
This time we get to move on to a plot. This is Doran's Scheme. It's a House Martell-only plot with 3 gold, 4 initiative, and 1 claim. And it says, when revealed, name a phase. Opponents cannot play event cards during that phase this round. Now, there's one other bit of text on this card that I found very interesting as we div this up. This is card number 35. Let me back up. The card we reviewed before this, Vhagar, what card number was it?
That was 37.
37. Interesting. Now, looking ahead, slight spoiler here, Selmy's Scheme. Now, that's card number 38. Now, I dealt these out of the pack.
You did.
In the order they appeared, right?
Yes, you did. The only thing I can probably think of there is that I do know that with this cycle, they did start packaging it differently, and they put all the house's cards together, and they hadn't done that in the past. It was all by card type. So maybe at some point in rotating over to the new distribution model, some wires got crossed, and they just put the 2 plots together, because they just saw plots and stuck them there, rather than putting it after a Meadowlark, which is where it should be numerically in the pack.
Yeah. Just interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's just odd to see. So yeah, Doran's Scheme. It's very similar to Shadow of the South.
Which turns out is a pretty good event.
Oh yeah, I'm always shocked that that doesn't see more play.
You know, during that summer of summer, so to speak, it did see a good bit of play.
Did it? I don't remember seeing much of it.
Really? Oh, yeah.
I immediately had... I had a play against me occasionally.
I was definitely seeing it around a lot, because it could shut down opponents going crazy with Game of Savas, recurring the Game of Savas and whatnot. You just turn off events for the challenge phase. And I definitely, once I saw that capability, definitely wound up adding it to the Brotherhood deck that I took to Gen Con that year, so I could shut down Game of Savas for a turn.
Cool.
Doran's Scheme seems... very reasonable. It seems like a very good plot effect, as long as you know your opponent's game plan.
Yes.
Or have a reasonable suspicion.
Yeah, it does have a little bit on... because the Shadow of the South have a gold cost 3 and a Shadow as well.
Off the top of my head, I don't think so.
I don't think it does, which kind of negates what I was literally about to say, in that you can choose like a non-challenge phase time. Because, I mean, if it does have a gold cost, which again, I don't think it does, but it might, that it would kind of leave marshalling phase out of your options. So, I mean, if people have like dissensions and stuff.
Right.
They wouldn't be able to play those. With Doran's Scheme, you just target a phase though, which is, I mean, cool. It's on demand. You don't have to dedicate a slot in your deck to it. You don't have to pay the 2 gold to put it into shadows. So, I mean, it's comparable. I'm not sure if it's... it's not necessarily bad in comparison, but it's not necessarily good in comparison.
Right.
You do lose out on the Shadow Seth if you are playing a Martell Summer deck. The ability to use it over and over again. It is just once.
Yeah. Now, I mean, what I would want to look at, just as an idea for a deck, Martell deck, would be a deck that would just dick with my opponent's events completely.
Mm-hmm.
Run the Shadow of the South, and run Doran's Game, and run He Calls It Thinking, maybe even run Paper Shield, too. I mean, and just keep them from ever getting anything off. Since events are so impactful in the game because of the surprise nature of them being played from hand and everything, I think that would be incredibly frustrating to an opponent.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Daryl would hate it. He loves his events.
He does. He also loves event cancel, though.
Which he does. Is weird.
He would like to play that particular Martell deck I just mentioned.
Probably.
It's a very interesting plot to me, and I think it has the potential to be really good.
Oh, yeah.
What would you rate it if you had to?
I'm waffling between a high C and a low B, so a C+ or a B-.
I'm in a similar realm. I'm gonna go with a C- right now because I think so much of its play depends on knowing what your opponent's doing. It's a lot like a card that I hear mentioned as a lot of people's favorite Magic card, Cabal Therapy.
I love Cabal Therapy.
Yeah, exactly. But it's only a great card when you know, number one, when to play it, and number two, what to name with it, right?
I mean, let's be fair, Doran's Scheme, most of the time you're going to name Challenge Face.
Oh, yeah.
Occasionally, if you have like a lot of allies in play, you might name Marshalling to avoid dissensions and stuff.
Not just that, depending on what your deck looks like, you may name Marshalling if you're against a Lannister player to dodge... House Divided.
Yes, that's fair. I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, that's very true. I mean, a lot of it has to do with, I mean, and anticipating what your opponent is playing as a part of any game, this just plays more into that. I mean, it's the same as playing any event cancel. You need to know if your opponent, you know, expecting your opponent to be playing events, when they're going to play events, what events are the most important to cancel, do I want to cancel this one when he might have another one later?
Right.
It just takes all of that thinking out, and then you just name a phase, and they just don't get to do anything.
Takes some of the thinking out.
It does take some of the... Okay, you're right.
You can still very easily name the wrong phase.
Taxation. Damn it.
I'm calling it now. Daryl's going to do it.
I can see that.
You watched him in that Melee game where he played Grey Wind and then played Rob Stark.
Love it. Love it. Next up, Selmy's Scheme. It's another plot. It's a 4 gold, 2 initiative, 1 claim... House Targaryen only. During power challenges, your army characters gain renown. I mean, handing out renown is never something that should be done lightly. And Targ is a quote-unquote army house, but they don't have a lot of really playable armies.
Army characters, in general, already more expensive. You're not going to have a ton of armies out. You're only probably going to be able to marshal one while Selmy's Scheme is revealed because it's at 4 gold. You know, if it was like a 6 gold plot,
that'd be pretty
then, cool. You know, I could see maybe being able to play around it more. You only get that renown during power challenges. If it said just your army characters gain renown this turn, I mean, because the only one I can think of that you're going to get multiple challenges out of anyway, is possibly the was it the summer something
followers? Oh yeah, the fair weather followers.
Yeah, the fair weather followers who needed to be summer. You have to play events. They're allies, so they can get discarded.
Well, you know, Summer Scheme alone gives them renown during power.
Oh yeah, never mind. See, they're not going to work with that anyway because they don't have power icons. So I mean, it just doesn't feel to me like Selmy's Scheme is quite there in any of its aspects. It's definitely the most blah scheme
that we've seen
so far.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, you know, it seems kind of... Maybe if it said knight and army characters, because, you know, Selmy was training knights for Dany in Book 5. You know, there would be a connection there. It would vastly open up the number of characters it could be used with.
It would open up, like, 2 more.
Dragon Knight, there's the...
Dragon Knight does not have a power icon.
Oh, yeah, never mind.
It's there's the Exile dude and Barristan Selmy himself, who already has renown.
Queen's
Knight.
Queen's Knight... Ser Jorah Mormont, any version of him.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to dip out of house, if it said Knight and Army, I would strongly consider dipping into neutral Hedge Knights. Mm-hmm.
Just
to play a one drop that for one turn had renown. I could see myself doing that.
I'm still not sure if I would.
I would experiment with the deck, mm-hmm. especially in like a melee game where that surprise power grab mm-hmm. is important, where you could suddenly say, oh, by the way, you know how I've been building up all these cheap, like, worthless knights? Power challenge you.
Hey, Will, but unfortunately, the text doesn't say knight or army. It just says army, and I'm going to give it a D.
That is definitely what I'm thinking as well. It just doesn't do enough of anything. Not even initiative.
Nope.
For the love of God, would it have killed anyone for this to be a 4-5-1?
4-5-1s. Oh, that's the dream.
I know. Living the dream. Have I mentioned to you before that that's the like Neo Show city code?
4-5-1?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it is. So if you need to call anyone here locally, 4-5-1.
Awesome. Next up.
Yeah. I guess it's back to me then, isn't it?
It is.
This is one we've made reference to several times. This is Battle for the Shield Islands. It is a neutral event. It is an epic battle.
Epic.
It's the first epic battle that we have seen in a very long time.
Yeah, a couple cycles.
And it reads, plot. After the dominance phase this round, there's an epic phase during which each player may initiate a single challenge of his choice. Ooh, women are excluded.
Yeah, women cannot.
characters with one or more naval enhancements may be declared as attackers or defenders while kneeling. Instead of the normal claim, the winner of each challenge may choose and take control of a location controlled by the losing opponent. Place this card next to your plot deck until the end of this epic phase.
Now, Will, I'm really glad you caught on that, because that's one thing I do want to mention.
What's that?
I don't want to say that I have been a stickler for cards that's printed.
But you almost made Greg quit and not play in a tournament.
I did almost do that. And Battle for the Shield Islands...
That was regionals last year, wasn't it?
It was. I think it was Moonboy.
Last year's Moonboy?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
Battle for the Shield Islands references not the losing opponent, but the loosing opponent.
Yeah. I can't believe that.
So...
Okay, I can believe that.
Card as written, you'll never seal a location with this card. It'll give you an epic phase, and your character's naval enhancements will be able to participate in challenges while knelt,
mm-hmm.
but you will not steal locations.
At all.
And until it is... errated in any tournament in which I have authority as a judge, I will rule it with the card as printed.
Okay. So, as printed, it's an F. But let's move past that. Let's assume it gets rectified very quickly.
I am fairly sure it will.
Okay.
Borderline positive.
Assuming it's already been fixed, let's study it in that contest.
Okay.
Context, then. The most important one, I think, and the one that a lot of people have already been jumping up and down about, be it in dismay or excitement, is that this hoses House of Dreams.
It hoses House of Dreams harder than really any other card. A City Besieged did a lot to hose it, but Battle for the Shield Islands absolutely hoses it.
So why does it do that? I think it's worth pointing out the rules quirk.
It is very worth it. While the Battle for the Shield Islands is clearly an event, and House of Dreams locations are immune to events, Battle for the Shield Isles is claim replacement. And as immune as a House of Dreams location is, it is not immune to claim.
Right. It's very similar to the reason... Actually, sorry, it is literally the same reason, but a very similar situation to the fact that Pyat Pree is able to kill the Princess of the Sun, Red Viper.
Yes, who is immune to character abilities. People see that the ability... It is text printed on a character... But it is not a character ability. It is replacing the claim. The Red Viper, the Princess and Red Viper can be chosen for military claim.
Right.
He's not immune to claim.
Right.
So he is not immune to being targeted.
It modifies game rules.
Yes.
Nothing's immune to game rules right now.
Correct. Yes, so it does do a lot to control House of Dreams.
Now,
I'll hold off judgment on whether that's a particularly good or bad thing.
Yeah. Now, it doesn't hose it absolutely completely, because I'll say, having gotten to play with this and against this, so far, it really seems that the person who goes first goes, takes wins a character, their epic, takes a location. The other person goes, wins an epic. Because you can make any of the three challenges. Yes. So whichever one you have characters that they don't.
Yeah.
So you can win. And then you take your own location back.
Yes.
So, you know, depending on how that turn order plays out.
Yeah, you would.
You can just get it back.
But it would not have the same immunities.
It never left play. So I would assume that it's still immune.
I guess that's true, actually. I hadn't thought of it like that.
Right. So what you're going to need to do if you're using this to hose House of Dreams is you're going to need to watch their characters for sure.
Yes.
You're also going to need to watch turn order. It's going to be most practical
for you to go first.
Exactly. They'll take something of yours. You're just going to have to suck it up. Whatever. You don't get it back because you need to take their House of Dreams. Mm-hmm. Once you have it, then they don't get to mess with it.
Yes. But yeah, Battlefield Shield Islands, it's a really cool card. I love epic battles. It's one of my favorite things from the early years of the game that I'm glad to see come back. It allows for a lot of really cool decks. I know Greg and I have both been fooling around with Star Siege decks. It's
crazy.
I've been fiddling
around with Lanny, Power Behind the Throne Rush.
Yes, Intrigue Rush, playing epic battles similarly to how Stark Siege decks play epic battles.
Yeah.
And they just load up on them, and the characters that don't kneel for intrigue challenges and just go into town.
Yep.
It's really good for any kind of naval deck, clearly, because, I mean, your naval characters get to participate in all sorts of things. And it only requires one or more naval enhancements, not necessarily on the relevant icons. So if I have a dude, like let's say I have one of the fleets from the first set, that have two icons and an enhancement, naval enhancement on one of those icons. Even if I don't have a naval enhancement on the intrigue icon on that character, he can still defend intrigue challenges while knelt because he has.
Are you sure about that? I could have sworn I'd seen that K-Tom had said something otherwise.
I would like
since to... it says that they can be declared. I think they still have to meet the other normal declaration requirements.
I guess that's possible. I would like to check on that.
Okay, so quick check on the Game of Thrones rules boards there. Shows a couple threads that bring up Battle for the Shield Islands, but I did not see the answer from K-Tom that I thought I had heard about.
And more importantly, I didn't see anything either.
Right. And that isn't to say that one of our two answers isn't right. One of them almost certainly is. We just didn't see anything saying either of the two.
Yes.
That question appeared to have not come up, but I mentioned this while we were paused and looking that up. For my side of things, it seems to have this sentence. Sorry, it does have a sentence that just says that characters with one or more naval enhancement may be declared as an attacker or defender while kneeling. I would expect myself that if they could participate in any challenge, regardless, that sentence would also include in that challenge or something along those lines. The way I interpret it, looking at this text, is that the only part of the standard declaration that they get around is being able to be knelt.
I mean, and then on mine, I could be completely incorrect, but similar like the Victarion we got last set, all it cares about is if there's a naval enhancement on one or more of their icons. And then if there is, then they can be declared as attackers or defenders. Now, I mean, obviously not, like, if they don't have an intrigue icon, they can't defend intrigue challenges. But if they have a military, if they have a naval enhancement on a military icon, the way I read it, they could defend and attack and power challenges while mounts.
I would think even if it goes that way, it needs clarification. Because the only part of the normal declaration rules that it specifies getting around is the knelt part. It's fine if they want it to get around that. They're just still gonna need to enter that in the FAQ, I think. Because part of the normal declaration rules is that something has to have the matching icon.
Fair enough. I just feel like the rules don't necessarily describe the icon type that has the naval enhancement. I completely understand where you're coming from, and someone much better with the rules than me should probably answer this, i.e. K-Tom or any of those European guys that write that one article on Card Game DB.
Iron Ratosker, I think?
I don't know their names.
I've probably goofed up how to pronounce Ratosker.
Those European guys.
I don't know.
I think one's German and one's Finnish, and there's one other. I don't know.
Yeah.
I like the Finnish people.
Silly Germans. They like rules.
I like the Germans also.
Okay. But moving on.
Yes.
Once they email us, then we can mention that in the next episode.
We gladly will.
Moving on, we've got one card left.
One card left in the entire pack. It is a plot. It is naval superiority. It's 3 gold, 3 initiative, 1 claim. And the text, raise the claim value on your revealed plot card by 2 during challenges in which you have declared a naval attacker.
Now,
I mean, this card has gotten a lot of press. And deservedly so, because it is potentially a 3-3-3.
Yeah.
Now, to make it that, you do have to have 3 characters, one of each with a military, an intrigue, and a power icon. And then 3 additional characters, one of each with a naval, an intrigue, and a military, okay. an intrigue, and a power icon, with naval enhancements on each of those individual icons. So it's not just play this and have 3 claim. There are a lot, I mean, not really a lot of extenuating factors, but there are several extenuating factors you do have to meet in order to accomplish the 3 claim.
Indeed. You gotta have a lot on the board. But dang, if it isn't cool when that happens.
It is really cool. I mean, just conjecturing, I think most of the time it'll probably be a 3-3-1 for 2 challenges, and you get the 3 claim on 1, maybe 2. I doubt that you'll successfully win 3 challenges and have 3 claim in all 3 of them.
That 1, though, is probably going to be whichever one you want. You're going to be skewing the deck towards a certain thing. For instance, Greyjoy, that's almost certainly going to be a 3-claim military challenge.
Yes.
And things like that. And that's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, that's probably a one-sided board wipe right there.
That's pretty close.
Assuming you win that challenge.
Claim two challenges are mean. Claim 3 are meaner. Not insurmountable, but...
getting close.
Yeah, adding 1 onto the claim makes it, I mean, clearly exponentially more dangerous, because that's how numbers work. I mean, not exactly, but...
But, yeah.
I mean, going from...
Arithmetically?
Yes.
I think that's the term you're looking for.
Yes, that is...
That means you're just adding.
Yes, I like adding. It's easy.
Oh, yes. Thank God.
But yeah, so, I mean, going from 1 to 2 claim is a huge leap. Going from 2 to 3 claim... is honestly maybe not as much of a huge leap, but it is definitely a noticeable amount.
Right on.
So with naval superiority, I'm leaning towards maybe a B minus, maybe a C. Again, it's one of those that I'm waffling between a high C and a low B.
I'm giving it a B myself, because I think part of that depends on how popular the Black Sails decks are. But I think any Black Sails deck is probably going to want to go ahead and
put this in. Almost.
Because definitely. It gives you the potential for that super brutal turn, and you're running the naval characters anyway.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's up there with naval reinforcements as kind of auto-include plots in Black Sails deck.
Yeah, exactly.
Plots are really not a reason not to run.
And the buzz around it so far seems to be that Black Sails is going to be pretty popular.
Yes, people seem to dig it.
And I can see it being fun in other decks, that... I just had an article go up on Card Game DB where I'm using the Sunilani Power Behind the Throne deck and some different things. So it's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. And it has a lot of brutal potential there without having a particularly bad downside.
Yeah. I mean, its downside is that it's just kind of an average plot unless you... It's honestly a little below average plot if you don't have a naval attacker.
Right. You got to build the deck around it a little bit. I think kind of puts it in that B range, especially with our new descriptor card for the B range being Illyrio.
Yeah.
It feels to me to be in a similar, that can be pretty brutal if you've already geared your deck around it.
True. I think you talked me into a, man, I'm so waffling. It is. I mean, you will get probably 1 big challenge, and then the rest of them will just be 1 claim. Most of the time. I mean, there'll be those dream games where you did get to get 3 3-claim challenges off. But I think those will be few and far between.
Well, let's just say it is light years better than the other 3-claim plot that's available.
It is infinitely better than that other card in the same. I honestly can't think of right now.
I don't know. Alex keeps trying to convince me.
He loves it. It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that is the newest pack, The Great Fleet. If you particularly agree, particularly disagree, or think I'm awesome, feel free to comment either on the Card Game DB page, the forum page, message us, post on Facebook, do whatever to get in contact with us. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah. Look wherever.
We are lots of places.
We are Legion.
Props and slops. I'm going to lead us off this week. I have a big prop that I'm super excited about. For anyone that remembers me talking on the show probably like a year and a half ago, probably closer to 2 years, I watched this little show that I loved on Netflix called Veronica Mars. Now, it has since been taken off of Netflix, unfortunately.
Aww.
I know, it's really... I actually tried to go back and rewatch it like a month ago, and it wasn't there, and I was really crushed. But it's a great show. If you can track it down, I highly recommend it. It's a high school noir, which is... I mean, it's lots of things that I love.
Does anyone wear a fedora?
Yes.
Okay. I'm in.
Yep. So, yeah. It went 3 seasons, and then it was canceled. And there, for since it came off the air, and that was probably like 2003 when it came off the air, maybe even before that. I never watched it when it was on the air. It's fairly old. When it came off the air, the creator, Rob Thomas, not the musician Rob Thomas, but the director Rob Thomas.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, I know.
Real excited.
He has talked on and off for the past several years about possibly doing a Veronica Mars movie. And Kristen Bell, the actress that plays Veronica Mars, also talked about it a lot. But as of today, they announced that there is a Kickstarter to fund the movie for Veronica Mars. When I checked earlier today, they were about a quarter of the way to their goal.
Yeah, what's their goal?
Their goal was $2 million for a movie. That's the actors and director taking a... very like working for cheap, and then WB, the actual that own the rights, doing all of the marketing. Basically, if they can prove that $2 million worth of people want the movie, they'll foot the rest of the bill.
Interesting.
And I just checked, and as of 7:55 p.m. Central Standard Time on Wednesday the 13th, of their $2 million goal, they were at $1,922,000. And this is the first day it's been up on Kickstarter.
That was exciting to see it move like that.
Yeah, and it's already gotten up another thousand, more than $1,000.
Wow.
Yeah, another thousand.
That's awesome. Yeah. That was good timing.
It was really good timing. Holy cow. Yeah, so if you, like me, love Veronica Mars, back it on Kickstarter for as low as, I think, $35. You get a digital copy of the movie the day it, or maybe not the day it comes out, but within days of it coming out. As well as I think they're also sending out like a PDF copy of the script the day the movie launches. They're planning like as broad a theatrical release as they can get, and then doing a digital release as the main release.
Gotcha.
So yeah, check it out.
Sounds cool.
I love Veronica Mars. Well, I think you actually would really like it.
Yeah, I do kind of want to check it out, but I'm bummed it's not on Netflix.
Yes, it's very unfortunate.
Boy, I've got several props this week. My first one I'm going to throw out there. To a new novel that I finished reading. Read it over the weekend. It's a YA book, but it was a really fun one called The False Prince. I forget the author's name now, but I'm sure you can look it up. In a nutshell, the story is an orphan named Sage is bought by a nobleman named Connor, along with several other boys from area orphanages. And they're brought back to his estate, and they're basically told, you have 2 weeks to learn how to impersonate the missing crown prince who's been gone for the last 4 years, because the rest of the royal family has died, and we need to crown you to keep the country together. The other boys will be killed in order to keep the secret.
That's actually sounds kind of neat.
And it was super fun. The main character, Sage, if you've read the King Killer Chronicles books, he is very much like Quoth. Very smart, good at a lot of things, but lets his mouth get away from him. So it's a fun read, and because it's YA, it's a pretty quick read, too. So.
I have, again, another prop. We really should just name this segment Props and Props, because we have, like, a slop.
I have
a
no
month.
Slops right now.
Yeah,
only good things have happened to me recently.
Same. Another prop to something that a lot of you guys are going to probably groan about. My fantastic and beautiful fiancée, Alicia. She is so deep into Fire Emblem that I honestly sometimes wonder if I have a fiancée anymore. I've logged maybe 20-ish hours in the game. She's probably pushing 40.
Nice.
I get home, and most days she's playing Fire Emblem. It's, I mean, she brings it to work and plays every day. I just like to see her super involved into a video game, because she never really was much into, like, she played through Mass Effect and loved it, but aside from Mass Effect, she's never really gotten into a video game.
Gotcha.
So I'm glad I was able to broaden her a little bit more.
Mass Effect, at least, is a good one to
It
choose.
Is a great one. She was actually mad at me when she started playing other video games, because none of them are as good as Mass Effect.
You know, that's actually a good point. Mm-hmm. I was all done. I mean, I couldn't touch another video game for, like, 9 months mm-hmm. afterward.
Yeah. Yeah, so I finally did find another video game that she is interested enough in to ignore me for.
It's a interesting phrasing, but I like it.
Yes.
I've got kind of a group prop here. I'm gonna give props out to a whole bunch of other podcasters because I lately have found, I've already kind of messaged some guys from some other shows and stuff, but lately it feels like I've been really getting in touch with a bunch of other shows a lot more, and I've been enjoying talking to some of the other guys that host some of these other shows. So I want to give some props out to Popper to the People, the Popper Magic the Gathering show that I listen to, and chat with Chris and Mike and Nate and those guys some. They just hit their 100th episode.
Cool.
By the time you hear this, it'll have been about a week before. So props to them for making it 100 episodes. That's freaking awesome. But I also want to give some props to some of the other LCG-related shows, partly because I've been talking to these guys. Our show's been brought up on their show fairly often. Granted, we get mentioned in Popper to the People also, but I want to make sure I'm not remiss in also passing the word along. So, for instance, I believe we did get mentioned in an episode of the Elder Things podcast.
Cool.
I haven't listened to their most recent episode, but so I'm a little bit behind on them, but I think we got mentioned there before, so props to D. Boren and my memory's failing.
Oh, I have absolutely
too many other podcasters to remember, but props to those guys.
The Call of Cthulhu podcast, by the way.
Yeah, for Call of Cthulhu.
If you're interested in that game.
Yep. As well, I've talked several times lately to the Cardboard of the Rings guys. Let's see, Brian and Brandon and...
I have no idea.
Somebody else. I don't know. I was just listening to the show earlier today, actually. But it's just so hard to keep track of everybody. Great show over there if you like the Lord of the Rings. They brought us up several times there. The melee objective rules that I came up with for Thrones were actually spurred by some thoughts that I had while listening to their show a month or two ago. So props to them. Props to the Agenda 7 podcast guys, whose names completely escape me right now, unfortunately. That's what I get for trying to do all this together
all at once.
Yeah. But props to them. They mentioned the other LCGs on their show right now, despite it being mainly Netrunner. But I chat with them a little bit about playing a bunch of the different games and kind of, you know, strategies moving back and forth between them and different ideas and stuff. So props to all sorts of podcasts. Go listen to them. I'm sure you're not the... I'm sure I'm not the only person playing a bunch of LCGs, so... probably be interested in these, and I guess I'd probably be remiss in not mentioning this other show. There's this guy on it. What is it? Small and Dirty? No, that's not right. Oh yeah, Tiny Grimes.
I don't know what a Tiny Grimes is.
I'm not sure either, but I think he hosts a couple different shows.
Really.
Another Thrones podcast called Summer is Coming, which needs to put episodes out more often, quite frankly. And the Smuggler's Den,
yes.
Star Wars podcast. So, yeah, keep up the hard work, guys.
Awesome. I have one additional prop. This is my last prop of the week. It is to a internet short that I know we've linked on the Facebook page, so people that are friends with us on Facebook have almost definitely already seen. It is High School of Thrones. Again, going back to high school, I don't think it's any secret of how much I love high school-related games or parodies of things. But it is, they have one episode out at the time of recording. Their second episode is due out on March 17th or 19th, I don't know, this coming Sunday. The Sunday after people will start listening to this episode. It is awesome. I recommend it. It's only like 5 minutes long, so you're not committing a lot of time to it. I laughed several times.
The idea is just awesome. Prom Night is coming. Prom Night is coming. Is the catchphrase.
Yes, it is.
And
it includes other such gems as We Are Stark, Our Way is the Vintage Way.
Yeah.
Which I actually want to have Alicia mock up Stark House cards of a direwolf with hipster glasses and have it say Our Way is the Hipster Way.
I love it.
Our Way is the Vintage Way, sorry.
Could you also have her do one with the fiery stag? The Fiery Heart Stag, and it could say a vote for Stannis is a vote for R'hllor.
I'm not adorable. I'm Stannis!
yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So go watch it.
Yes. It comes highly recommended. I sincerely hope that episode 2 maintains the humor. And also, the actual intro, like, the intro...
Oh my goodness. It is awesome.
Really, really impressive.
I can't believe it's similar to the
Game of Thrones TV show, how it's all, like, clockwork and building stuff up off out of the ground. It's like that, except it's all like doodles in a notebook that shoot up into like a 3D model of the school, and it's really impressive.
Oh yeah, totally.
Like, if you're gonna watch it for anything, watch it for that.
Yeah.
We're all totally fucking dragons.
Come on, dog. But anyway, yeah, and I think my last prop is also gonna be to a video. This one, however, is going to be to the Kick-Ass 2 Red Band trailer that went up, which I thought was totally awesome. You should go check it out. The first movie was a blast. This one looks like it'll be just as awesome.
And has Jim Carrey in it.
Yeah, Jim Carrey's edition is amazing. I won't spoil who he is, because the first time I watched it, I had no clue until they flashed the name Jim Carrey and then showed the character again. And then I was like, oh my god, now I can see it.
Yeah, the exact same thing happened to me.
Yeah. So, yeah, go check it out. It looks awesome.
Yes. Well, thank you for staying tuned for this, again, long episode of Two Champs, One Chump. I really wish we could shut up a little more often.
You and me both, bro.
Yeah. But we will see you next time at the same Bat Channel, same Bat Place. Danger Zone. The ghost who never goes away.